I'll go ahead and call the meeting to order. So I'd like to call this October 4th, 2024 meeting of the Arizona State Board of Optometry to order at 8:05. Ms. Becker, would you please call roll?
Thank you. Dr. Mastores?
Present.
Dr. Cohen?
Present.
And Dr. Carpenter? I'll come back. Dr. Brown?
Present.
Mr. Hamed?
Present.
Ms. Galan? Noted absent.
I see Mr. Hamed is here.
I said I was present.
Yes, I got him. I was Diva Galan is not here.
Okay.
And will you call the president, please?
Yes, and I wanted to go back. Dr. Carpenter, did he log on yet? Okay, and then Dr. Moffitt?
Present.
Okay, and board staff, Director Whelan?
Present.
I didn't hear Dr. Mastores. Did you?
Yes, I got her.
Yes, okay. Maybe my audio is weird.
And then Fawn Becker, present. Legal counsel, Mona Baskin?
Yes, good morning, everyone. Present.
Mona. And then one last time, Dr. Carpenter, did he get on yet? Okay, noted absent. And Madam President, we have quorum.
Thank you. Agenda item C, board purpose statement. The board meeting statement of purpose. A license to practice optometry in this state is a privilege granted by the Arizona legislature through the Optometric Practice Act. In 1907, on behalf of the people of the state, the legislature created the Arizona State Board of Optometry to regulate the practice of the profession of optometry, issue licensure where appropriate, and in general, assure the public that the practice of optometry will be conducted with reasonable skill and safety by persons who meet the curriculum requirements to hold a Doctor of Optometry degree from an accredited optometry school. To enforce the Optometric Practice Act, the board reviews applications for licensure and complaints relative to the conduct of its licensed optometrists and is charged with determining if the provisions of the Optometric Practice Act are met. In addition, the board may promulgate rules and policies in conformity with the stated purpose of the board and the mission as mandated by law. As of January 1, 2019, all board meetings are digitally recorded with the recordings of the audio available to the public on the board's website under the consumer information link. Agenda item D, declaration of conflicts of interest for this meeting. Are there any conflicts of interest amongst the board members to declare for today's meeting?
This is Dr. Brown. I've declared a conflict of interest with Dr. Duong.
Okay. Noted. Thank you, Dr. Brown. Any others? Okay. Agenda item E, President's Report. I have no report for today's meeting. Agenda item F, Review, Discussion, and Possible Action on Investigative Reviews and Complaints. As this is a telephonic and virtual meeting, I would like to invite all people in attendance to preface their comments with their name so that everyone knows who's speaking. In addition, when referring to a patient, please use the patient's initials only. We'll start with number one, Debbie Duong, IR number 202430. Dr. Duong, I see that you're present.
She is present, Madam President. She just hasn't unmuted herself yet.
Okay. And then Council Megan Gailey, I see you there. And right. Then is patient DW present? Okay. So first I'd like to ask for a board summary. One of the board members, please summarize this case for all in attendance.
This is Dr. Cohen. I'll give a brief summary.
Okay.
Patient DW saw Dr. Duong, had been a patient of Dr. Duong for some time. And at the end of the exam, patient DW's husband noted that she was not given any written documentation of the results of her testing and was told that she'd have to pay $52 for the, it sounds like for the prescription. The response was that this had been an ongoing patient with Dr. Duong and that there had been no issues with this policy before. And it was only upon patient returning home and discussing with her husband that he was upset about the fact that she wasn't given anything and had to pay $52 in order to be able to receive her prescription.
Thank you, Dr. Cohen. So at this time, I'll ask one more time, is patient DW present? Okay. Counsel or Dr. Duong, would you like to take a minute and respond to this complaint?
I would, Madam President. Just a few comments.
Sure.
I agree with Dr. Cohen's summary of this particular case. This particular patient had been a patient of Dr. Duong's for 7 years. In each of those 7 years, the refraction was done at each of the appointments. Over the course of those 7 years, Dr. Duong felt that she built a really good relationship with this particular patient. And if the patient had any questions regarding her recommendations or care and treatment, she would ask. Over the course of those 7 years, this patient never had any concerns with any of the care and treatment nor recommendations that Dr. Duong gave her. It wasn't until this last time, as Dr. Cohen pointed out, when she went home and discussed the visit with her husband, that the husband immediately filed this complaint with the board. Based upon Dr. Duong's practice, we believe that she met the Practice Act, and we ask that this matter be dismissed. Thank you. And Dr. Duong is here if the board members have any questions.
Okay. Dr. Duong, would you like to address the board as well, or are you comfortable with counsel's comments? Oh, you're on mute. Dr. Duong, you're on mute.
Apparently it's the day for tech issues.
Yeah. We still can't hear you, Dr. Duong. So it seems like there's difficulty getting that microphone working. I'm going to move this forward for board discussion, and we'll come back to you, Dr. Duong, if you get your microphone working there, okay? So I'm going to close open discussion and open this up for board members' discussion at this point. Any comments from the board? Anyone like to open?
This is Dr. Mastoris. So it seems like this is a failure to understand that a non-covered service by insurance. In the past, looking at all the history we have, which was a lot, it does seem that the patient has paid for this this copay for refraction in the past, and perhaps just did not understand that that is just how insurance works, and that their current insurance does not cover a refraction. So I do not see any violation here.
Thank you, Dr. Mastoris. I'll add for the record, so I agree with Dr. Mastoris' comments. I'll also say that there was a signed consent in the paperwork that the patient signed consenting to the fee, that it was an out-of-pocket expense. I also see no violation here. Dr. Brown, any comments?
He's recused.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. That's correct. I'm sorry. Mr. Hamed, any comments?
No comments.
Okay. I believe he said no comments, but we just heard the comments.
I said no comments.
Okay. Thank you. Dr. Cohen, any further comments?
Just that I failed to see that there's any violation of the Optometric Act.
Thank you. Would someone like to offer a motion?
Yes, does Dr. Cohen, I'll make a motion that this this be dismissed for failure to have violated the Optometric Practice Act.
Thank you, Mastoris. I'll second.
Thank you. So any further discussion? We've had a motion and a second to dismiss the case. Any further discussion? Dr. Duong, I'll ask you any work with your microphone there.
Thank you. Sorry. Good morning, everybody. My apologies for the 2024 lag here. No comments.
Okay, thank you. So we've had a motion and a second to dismiss this case. against Dr. Duong or IR202430. Let's take a vote. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
Dr. Mestores?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 4-0. Since we have counsel here, I'll move forward to number three, Jordan Bluth, IR202503. Is Dr. Bluth present?
Yes, I'm present.
Is that you, Dr. Bluth, the JMB initials?
Okay. Yes.
There we go. Okay. And then Council of Megan Gailey, I think you represent Dr. Bluth as well.
I do, Madam President. Thank you.
Okay. And is patient DH present? Okay. I think I'll offer the board summary in this case. So this complaint was brought by Dr. Mehran. He was the retinologist for patient DW. Patient had a retinal detachment after cataract extraction in the left eye performed on December 11th, 2023. Patient had a history of a retinal detachment in the fellow eye and was monocular and had complaints of increased floater and decreased vision at multiple post-op visits, but retinal exam was not performed. Final post-op visit on January 8th, 2024. The plan at this visit was to consider an evaluation with retina, and follow-up was 2 days later with the macula off, retinal detachment left eye. Patient is now no light perception in the right eye and light perception in the left eye. I'll give an opportunity here for Dr. Bluth or counsel, Megan Gailey, if you'd like to comment.
Thank you, Madam President. In terms of it, I think our summary that we provided to the board shows Dr. Bluth's care and treatment of this particular patient. I think it is worth noting that the provider who made the complaint to the board at no time ever approached nor discussed with Dr. Bluth any of his concerns regarding the care and treatment of this particular patient. With respect to the January 8th, 2024 visit that the patient had with Dr. Bluth attempted to do a full eye exam but was unable to see. Instead of waiting for an appointment to be scheduled with retina, he went and asked that it be scheduled as soon as possible. The fact that they were able to get this particular patient in with Dr. Mehran shows that there was no lag in scheduling because she was seen by Dr. Mehran on the 10th. About a day and a half after she was seen by Dr. Bluth, which is a fairly quick turnaround in this particular situation. In terms of it, from the review of Dr. Bluth's care and treatment in the postoperative period, the visits that he had in December immediately after the cataract surgery were performed didn't warrant an additional examination or referral to retina. When he saw her on January 8th, it was a completely different presentation. It was an emergency visit in which the patient had called to be seen, was seen that afternoon by Dr. Bluth, and Dr. Bluth put measures in place so that the patient could be seen by retina. Based upon this, we would ask that this complaint be dismissed. Dr. Bluth is here, as you can see, and he is willing to answer any questions that the board has regarding his visits with this particular patient. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Gailey. Dr. Bluth, would you like to take an opportunity to address the board? Any further comments?
No, I appreciate what Megan said there, and I agree with what she said. I'm here to field questions as they come up and welcome the discussion.
Okay, thank you. So this will close open discussion, and I'll open this up for board discussion. Comments from the board?
Yes, this is Dr. Cohen. I do have a question. I'll make sure I read this correctly. January 8th, the patient was seen, and the 10th was when seen by the retinal specialist. And if I went back and checked the calendar, it said that she lost her vision on Saturday or Sunday. So that according to the patient, this had not, this had barely predated the January 8th meeting. I think the 10th is, January 10th was on a Wednesday. Patient was seen on Monday by Dr. Bluth, and on the 6th, somewhere in the sixth and seventh is when she was aware of the loss of vision. Is that accurate?
I would. Oh, are you asking me, Dr. Cohen, or
no,
are you?
We're asking Dr. Bluth or counsel.
I believe that's correct, according to what's in the charts there. Yes.
Thank you very much.
So I'll put some comments out for the board discussion here. Surgery was December 11th, 2023. And patient was seen at 1 day post-op with 20/200 vision. So preoperative vision in this left eye was 20/40. 1 day post-op, 20/200 with 2+ corneal edema. So I can understand at that visit why the vision was down if the patient indeed had 2+ corneal edema. We don't see 2+ corneal edema central in the cornea very often at 1 day post-ops nowadays, especially with an uncomplicated cataract. So that is interesting to me. The next visit was at the 18th, 1 week later. And the patient at this visit had 20/150 vision, pinhole, no improvement. So when a pinhole is used and there's no improvement, it's not refractive in nature. It was noted at that time that the cornea still had 1+ edema, but the patient complained of seeing black dots in the vision. That's a retinal complaint, and everyone, all the doctors on this meeting know immediately when you have new floaters in the vision and that's a retinal complaint and you should dilate the patient. The patient was dilated at that visit. The technician went ahead and dilated the patient, but there was no posterior retinal exam done. So this is highly questionable to me that the patient was not examined. The retina was not examined at that 1 week post-op. Next visit was January the 2nd. This was with your colleague, Dr. Sherlock. Patient again at that visit, 20/250. I'll say again, pre-op vision was 20/40 in this eye. Vision was 20/250, pinhole no improvement. Complained of a decline in vision and an increase in floaters. She said, I quote, I'm concerned about losing my sight altogether. She again was not dilated at this visit. The next visit was January the 8th with Dr. Bluth. The assessment was, I understand that you can't see into the back of the eye at that point, especially if there's a large vitreous hemorrhage, which was what I assume based on your notes that had occurred. But at this visit, it said consider an evaluation with retina, and the complaint was that the vision was split. So if you have a 20/40 patient and you're seeing them, let's say 1 week postoperatively, and the vision at that visit is 20/150, most people would, with pinhole no improvement and a new complaint of black dots in the vision and a history of a retinal detachment in the fellow eye, this patient is monocular. I can't for the life of me understand why you didn't look into the back of that eye. One thing about retinal detachments, you know, you don't know how or when they start. So if you have a tear and then you give it time to evolve, you don't know if the retina detached all at once and the macula was off at that visit already, or if it slowly evolved over time before it started to involve the macula. But at the one, you know, the January 8th visit, that's the first attempt made to look into the back of that eye. I find this care reckless, careless. So I think that you have a real problem on your hands, Dr. Bluth, with this care. And I think Dr. Sherlock does also. I'll leave it there and let other board members comment. Dr. Mistoris, any thoughts?
This is Dr. Mastoris. Dr. Moffitt, I completely agree with everything you've said. I am suspicious that on the December 18th visit, where she first noted that she had new floaters, that something was happening in that retina at that time. The other huge concern I have is that this patient was no light perception in the other eye. So even though maybe your standard of care for follow-ups post-cataract surgery usually goes in this way, I feel like if you have a patient that's NLP and you've operated on the other eye, that you take a large consideration. I would have called the cataract surgeon in. I would have called the retina surgeon in. I don't understand how the practice works in that this is not easy to happen. It seems like there's many, many doctors there that could have seen this patient sooner. She called multiple times. There's multiple documented phone calls. This patient was telling you there's a problem. And I do not think that she got proper care. This was absolutely heartbreaking to look through. I feel that the retina specialist, Dr. Mayron, was appropriate to put this to our attention. And as I said before, I'm heartbroken for this patient.
Thank you, Dr. Mestores. I completely agree. Dr. Brown, comments?
Yeah. Thank you, Dr. Brown. So the one thing about the plus two corneal edema, we shouldn't be seeing that at this late stage of, but I do. It's disappointing when I do. And I've seen surprising results. Sometimes it's just longer phaco time, but we see it in our office more than we would like to. But that aside, the day two call, the day four call, the seeing black spots, I was very disappointed when I saw that they were dilated, but then no record of posterior pole examination. That was very difficult for me. I don't have any disagreement with the observations that have been made today, and I too am concerned.
Thank you. Dr. Cohen, any further comment?
No, this is Dr. Cohen, nothing further. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Hamed, any comments?
Let me bring a different perspective, having obviously not being the doctor's shoes, but in being in the patient's side shoes. As a person who has gone through cataract surgery and with the risk of a retinal detachment, if you will, there's always a risk when a cataract surgery is done like this. Obviously, I've gone through it before, so I understand. Whereas I have my one eye that I see out of, I have light perception. The other eye I don't see out of, I don't have light perception at all. So what I want to know, Dr. Bluth, is were the risks reviewed with the patient at all to let them know that, hey, you know, there's always a risk involved when it comes to cataract surgery of retinal detachment, considering their situation at all? Was that brought up and discussed?
My assumption would be yes. The risks and would generally be discussed with the patient preoperatively, which would probably have been with a surgeon, Dr. Pfister. I doubt that we discussed it postoperatively, but preoperatively, that's usually well discussed and informed with the patient.
Were you present during the surgery?
No.
Okay.
This is Dr. Mestores. I have another question. Do the cataract surgeons in your practice ever do their post-ops? Is it always an optometrist?
I don't think I could say it's always an optometrist, but frequently it's an optometrist doing the follow-up post-op.
Okay. Just seems that somebody, like, again, NLP in one eye and you just operate on it, you'd want to know what's going on. How did it go? You know, there's a lot of drop balls here on a very sick eyes.
So I'm going to put out there for the record the way that I see this, just for the other board members, so that we can discuss this and see if we're in agreement. The way that I see this, Dr. Bluth, with regard to Statute 32-1701-G, any conduct or practice, including incompetency, that constitutes a danger to the health, welfare, or safety of the patients or the public. I have a concern that that's not been met. That statute's not been met. I have a concern with regard to O, conduct that discredits the profession. I have a concern with regard to R4-21-304. A licensee shall conduct an examination in accordance with the standards of care prevalent in the community and consistent with the current industry of practice. So it's current standard to dilate a patient complaining of new floaters. She brought this up multiple times and it was not done. I have a concern with regard to 32-1743. A4 and 11. Committing unprofessional conduct and violating any of the rules adopted by the board pursuant to this chapter. In my opinion, the board should take disciplinary action. I would think we should offer a consent agreement. I think that we should discuss suspending Dr. Bluth's license. We can figure out how long we think that's appropriate for. I believe that he should be responsible for doing 10 additional continuing education credits in retina. We could also consider a civil penalty up to $5,000. I believe that professional conduct like this, where a patient is severely harmed by the lackluster and incompetent behavior of the doctor, that this should send a message to all doctors providing this care. Provide the care that's due the patient or don't do this kind of work. So that's my message to Dr. Bluth. Other board members, any thoughts on the statute violations that I raised or consent agreement, suspension of license, how long, CE or civil penalty?
This is Dr. Brown. This is the first time I've sat on a case like this. I don't disagree with the statute you've listed, and I'm not opposed to moving forward with some form of discipline. I'm not sure what our past things have been, so I'm going to listen to the rest of the discussion.
Okay. Dr. Mestores?
Dr. I also agree. I don't know if Margaret could comment
prior. Madam Vice President, what is your question?
What have we done in the past for situations like this?
Each Madam President, members of the board, Madam Vice President, each case is individual and previous actions by the board are not considered. So you're starting with a clean slate. I think Dr. Moffitt has laid out the statutes that you would want to look at for disciplinary action. It really is up to the board members as to how egregious they feel the situation is. And based on the statutes that were cited, what kind of action they want to do. You know, suspensions can be one day, they can be 30 days. Civil penalties, that's under 32-1744-D3, just in case it wasn't mentioned. It's up to 5,000 per violation of the chapter. There were several cited. So if they feel like a financial impact is more important, the board can certainly do that. I think Dr. Moffitt also laid out 10 hours of additional continuing education in the area of retinal disease. So the parameters are there. It's really up to the board to determine what kind of impact they would like this to have for the doctor for, you know, hopefully prevention in the future of such an issue. Does that answer your question? Okay, thank you.
So I'll state again for the record, this patient lost her vision. She's blind now for the rest of her life, and it's complacency at a minimum on the part of Dr. Bluth, if not complete incompetency. I would suggest maybe we break this down and see where everybody has agreement and where we don't. So I would say suspend his license for 30 days. Let's see if we have agreement on that or if we don't have agreement on that. Dr. Cohen, what do you say about suspension of his license?
Would it be possible to work in the other direction with the obvious one, like the continuing ed, since
sure.
the suspension is
all right.
probably
easy. Continuing education for okay. 10 hours in retina. Do
okay.
you?
Okay, I do agree with 10 hours of additional continuing ed. It should be additional to the requirements for licensure.
Okay, Dr. Mestores, do you agree with CE and retina?
I do.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Dr. Mestores, I agree.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. CE and retina?
Absolutely.
Okay. And then Mr. Hamed, agree?
I do agree first 10 hours of CE written.
Okay. We could impose a civil penalty up to $5,000. Dr. Cohen, this patient lost her vision. What do you think about a civil penalty up to $5,000?
Yes, I would think a civil penalty is certainly appropriate. And I think in light of the impact, it should be in the maximum of the higher end of that. And all the numbers are arbitrary, but it warrants significant consideration.
Okay. Dr. Mastores, how do you feel civil penalty?
I would like to ask, how many violations did you have? Was it four?
Five.
Okay, so you could potentially do up to 5,000 per.
But I'm only suggesting five. You can suggest what you would like, but.
I would say 5,000, yeah.
Okay. Dr. Brown?
Thank you. Mrs. Whalen has her hand up. Do we want to hear?
Thank you for recognizing me, Dr. Brown, Madam President, members of the board. I just wanted to reiterate the civil penalties go directly to the general fund. They do not come to the board, just in case there's some confusion or if people feel that it's punitive, it's not. It is not for the board to make money. I'm sorry to have to say that, but sometimes people feel it's a little bit that way. So I just wanted to clarify that goes to the general fund of the state.
Okay.
Thank you.
No problem here. Dr. Brown?
So as I think through this and the levels, I toy with the idea, you've talked about possibly 30 days, 5,000 has been discussed, and I'm open to both of those. I'm open to a mixture of 2 weeks and 20,000. I mean, I think it should be felt. And so I'm not opposed to 5,000. I'm not opposed to 30 days, but I would be opposed to 30 days and 25,000.
Okay. Mr. Hamed, how do you feel civil penalty up to 5,000?
All right, let me give my points of view here on this one. Margaret, I got a question for you first. Let's talk about the factors here. Does the record show in the past that Dr. Bluth has had any complaints with this board at all?
No, he has not.
Okay, so he starts with a clean slate. He has a clean slate previously prior to this complaint with the board. Okay, I see that here. Do we have a statement at all whatsoever? Have we anything at all from the patient in question at all directly to this board?
We do not, other than the complaint itself.
That's my point. So they did. The complaint did not come from the patient. It came from another colleague, another doctor, correct, if I'm right?
Yes, that's correct.
Thank you. Okay, so we haven't heard from the patient here. We just heard from another colleague there. It's a question of practice. I don't question the issue of additional continuing hours. I do got a problem with a penalty because I'll tell it to this way, guys, as a person with a visual impairment. No amount of money can bring back what a loss you have of vision like that. And I feel really bad for the patient in this question here, if you will. But also, you have to consider one factor, ladies and gentlemen, having been on the other side of the knife, if you will, not being used on me. You can't put the blame on something that Dr. Bluth didn't do. He did not use the knife, if you will. Yes, his post-op care could have been a better, if you will. I think it was poor, for lack of a better term. But the ultimate responsibility on that for their lack of care when it comes to the surgery was to the cataract surgeon in this case, because they have to weigh all the factors in that in coordination with a retinal specialist who has to be involved in that and giving the go-ahead on that, if you will. Looking at Dr. Bluth's point of it as well is he just has to recommend whether they go for the surgery or not. How that's done or whether he handles the knife, that's on the error of the surgeon in question here, if you will. I would be fine if a suspension, a mild suspension, no more than maybe a week at the most. I cannot see beyond that. And the fine, I'd go for a fine at the lower end, just as a disciplinary form and measure, if you will. And I'm saying this from a perspective as a patient, as visual impairment. I'm looking at this from the most dispassionate point as possible. And I ask you as doctors on this board, try to be as passionate as possible on that. So that's where I stand right now on this issue.
Thank you, Mr. Hamed. I disagree with you wholeheartedly in a number of areas there with your comment. The responsibility for the postoperative care lied with Dr. Bluth and then also with Dr. Sherlock. The surgeon did the surgery, but we have no idea when the retina detached. So there's not an assumption that it happened at the time of surgery. We don't know when it detached. And had Dr. Bluth dilated and looked and ruled out a retinal detachment, then we wouldn't be having this conversation. He did not practice the standard of care. And so that is why he's responsible for this. The purpose of the board is to protect the public and the public's interests. And in this regard, I believe that that's what we are doing. You can't offer this care and offer it in an incompetent manner. And so that's the reason that we're coming down on Dr. Bluth the way that we are.
With all due respect, Madam President, I get you there, but I'm going to use a metaphor, if you will, here. If I see someone being shot and I don't say anything, are you going to hold the crime of murder on me? Or are you going to hold the person that held the gun and actually discharged that bullet out of the gun? That's why you have to look at it as being. There has to be blame assigned. You're correct. But at certain points and levels, as Dr. Brown said earlier, but what level of it there? So I'm not disagreeing, if you will, on the overall aspect of it. I'm disagreeing about how what the penalty would be, if you will. So if you're going to assign we have to assign the blame, Madam President. We got to assign it appropriately and accordingly. You can't put the whole burden on Dr. Bluth, if you will. He didn't have the knife, if you will. He didn't have the equipment. He didn't conduct the surgery. Yes, was there some post-op care that was careless? Absolutely. I have no question whatsoever, having been on the other side of this position. And I feel for the patient, having been in her shoes, if you will. But you just can't put the whole burden on that on Dr. Bluth, if you will, in that respect. Blame has to be put accordingly, and it should be with the surgeon and the retina specialist in question. More on them, and Dr. Bluth and Dr. Sherlock will have their blame and penalty applied upon them accordingly.
I agree. Blame needs to be assigned accordingly. I believe that I am assigning it accordingly. He has a duty to his license and to his patient to practice the standard of care, and he didn't. Go ahead, Dr. Cohen.
Yes, hi, this is Dr. Cohen. Based upon that rationale, I would suspect the next step would be that there would be no longer any co-management of cataract patients, because if a surgeon's going to remain liable for what happens during the post-op period provided by another licensed provider, why would they make the referral instead of keeping it themselves? So when we take over that care, it's at the trust of the surgeon thinks we can do so, and it's our trust that we think we're capable of providing the care to see the patient from surgery to recovery. I have one question for you, Dr. Moffitt. Has the board initiated any action, or has anyone initiated action against Dr. Sherlock? Is that something that this isn't for us to decide right now, but is that something that the board would do now that aware?
It is, and that's at a future meeting.
Okay.
Yeah.
So thank you very much.
The docket. So it looks like we have 3 out of 4 in agreement on the civil penalty up to $5,000. So now let's come back to the issue of suspension of the license. I suggest.
Excuse me. If Dr. Brown has another comment first.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Dr. Brown.
I don't know how to raise my hand like Margaret did. I'm going to have to learn that later. I think that the body of our discussion is really demonstrating the difficulty of this case and the severity of this case. And I really appreciate the comments we've been receiving. Mr. Ahmed, on the other side of this, has given us a perspective that we don't have as providers, and the recommendation to try to be dispassionate was, I appreciate that. And as has been pointed out, I do think the one thing that might be missing and has been stated though, is once the care was handed off to Dr. Bluth, and once there were repeated complaints that indicated a retina exam should be done, we'll never know if there was a tear that could have been prevented and sight preserved had it been found earlier. So that's the reason many of us are moving forward on the punishment, is there were a lot of red lights that were flashing and they were not heeded. I guess you're talking $5,000, and you did bring up now talking about the penalty or time off.
Yeah, suspension. And I haven't put a motion together. I'm trying to see where we have agreement and where maybe we don't. So I suggested suspension up to 30 days of his license. Dr. Brown, you want to start?
Sure. My initial thoughts as we started was a week. when the monetary penalty was the lowest at 5,000, 30 days sounded reasonable. After discussion of dispassionate, and I'm good for at least 2 weeks for sure. At least okay. 2 weeks.
All right. Dr. Cohen?
The difficulty here is that, you know, everything we're talking about is so arbitrary. What has an impact, as was accurately stated by Mr. Ahmed earlier, is that this patient is, he knows what it's like to walk in his shoes. And as you commented, that there is no, she's lost her vision for the rest of her life. So whatever we talk about, whether it's a week, a month, or whatever, is still arbitrary. But I probably would go along with Dr. Brown and say 2 weeks would be an appropriate amount.
Okay. Dr. Mestoris, your thoughts on suspension?
I agree. 2 weeks.
Okay. Mr. Haman?
I'll go with 2 weeks. I can agree with that part.
Okay. So then I would like to offer a motion that we offer Dr. Bluth a consent agreement claiming that incompetency here with regard to his care with patient DW. I'm going to start with my statutes again. Give me just a second. That he violated 32-1701G, 32-1710, R4-21-304, 32-1743, A4, and 11. In this consent agreement, we would offer disciplinary action that consists of 10 hours of continuing education in retinal pathology, a civil penalty of $5,000, and a suspension of his license of 2 weeks. Do I have a second?
Dr. Mestoris, I second.
Thank you. Any further discussion?
Can we get Mona's opinion on this one from a legal perspective, okay, if you will?
Would you like to go into executive session or would you just like a general statement?
General statement's fine with me unless the board wants to go into executive session. I'm fine either
one. Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Hamed, members of the board. Dr. Bluth and Ms. Gailey, the parameters of the consent agreement that have been offered based on the violations are within the statutory parameters and are, you know, appropriate based on my experience with the board and discussions regarding the severity of these facts. This seems that it is within the parameters of the law. If the motion would also need to state that you're going to offer the consent agreement, and if not signed, it would proceed to an informal proceeding. And if not accepted, it would move to a formal hearing.
Okay. So you want me to restate my motion, Mona?
You can just add, you okay. could for clarity, or you could just add, if not right. accepted, move to an informal Absolutely. Proceeding, and if not accepted, move to formal hearing.
Okay. So if our consent agreement is not accepted by Dr. Bluth and counsel, then we would move towards an informal proceeding. And if not accepted, then we would move towards a formal proceeding. So now we'll vote. We've had a motion and a second. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Aye.
You're on mute, Mr. Hamed.
He said, no, I'm not. I said
oh.
aye.
Oh.
Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
Oh, I didn't hear you, Dr. Cohen. I'm sorry.
Did I?
Aye.
Dr. Mestoris?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 5-0.
Dr. Moffitt, this is Mona Baskin. Just for the record, I did not hear who the second was.
Dr. Mestoris.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And just for the record, I can hear Mr. Hamed. He comes through loud and clear.
Okay.
Some of the other speakers didn't just.
Maybe there's yeah. a lag because sometimes I can't hear him.
Okay.
All right. So I think we'll move on then. I'm just looking to see who's here. Dr. White, I think we'll move on with your complaint. Number five, Christopher White.
Madam President, excuse me. Dr. Goldman is also present.
Dr. Goldman.
He's number two there.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I don't see Dr. Goldman on here.
It's under my name.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay, we'll go with Craig Goldman then first. If your counsel is that, are you counsel, Ms. Stark?
Yes, Madam Chair. Sarah Stark, counsel for Dr. Goldman.
Okay. So then we'll first start, and then Dr. White will come to you next. We'll start with Dr. Craig Goldman, IR number 202431. Is patient CSA present? Okay. And I see Dr. Goldman and then Ms. Stark are present. Can I have a board summary, please, for IR 202431?
This is Dr. Brown. The patient reports that since 2020 had not had a single correct prescription from this optometrist. Quote, I find it wasteful and deceiving to have had incorrect contact prescriptions all these years and not realized it. Interesting. After repeatedly removing and inserting contacts with hand sanitizer, her vision became cloudy with halos. Office manager Jonathan said not to worry about it, and office manager Victoria said she shouldn't be using ClearCare. Doctor's response was that the contacts were mixed up right and left when ordered from a third party online, and that the doctor is not responsible for staff replies on the phone. That's my summary.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. So as patient CSA is not present, I'd like to offer this opportunity to Ms. Stark and Dr. Goldman, if you'd like to make comments directed towards the board.
Yes, thank you, Madam President. So we'll be very brief here. We provided a written response and the patient's records. And I think, you know, there was some significant misunderstanding here on the patient's part. I mean, at one point she came in and she had put the lenses in the wrong eyes, and that was why she was not able to see out of the lenses that were provided. Dr. Goldman and his staff did go above and beyond to try to satisfy her. They've given her a full refund, but we don't believe there's any violation here. And we are here to answer any questions the members may have about our response or any of the records. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Dr. Goldman, no individual comments?
No, it's all good.
Okay.
We'll be available for questions.
Okay. So then we'll close open discussion and open this up for the board for discussion. Comments from the board?
This is Dr. Mastroes. It looks like from the chart that the sort of refraction was a little bit all over the place. So at one point she's a 250, 150 with some cell, and then she's a 150 with a lot of cell. So it looked like her refraction was all over the place, and that might have been the reason for the contacts not working. I do think there was some bad advice given by the staff, as well as just bad staff advice. Maybe more training needs to be done to the staff, and the doctor should have, been more of a lead on this. I don't know.
Thank you. Dr. Cohen, any comments?
Yes, I just had a question, Dr. Goldman. Do you have an office policy if a patient has a problem, like possibly from the hand sanitizer, that it's okay for a staff member to triage that to determine whether that should be evaluated, or is that something they know should have a doctor take a look in light of the complaint?
Yeah, she really should have been advised to come back. She was advised to come back in the following day. She was instructed to remove the lenses, and then we would see her the following day. In particular, we had ordered some additional trials for her to, given one of her complaints initially. Had she come in that day, that would have been very easy to do. This was all happened outside of my awareness. So But yeah, we probably should have had her come in immediately that day. I could have taken a look at it, but we never told her not to come in. She was supposed to come in the following day, and then yeah, just never showed.
Thank you, Dr. Bowman.
Thank you, Dr. Cohen. Dr. Brown, any comments?
I see no violations in this case.
Mr. Hamed, any comments? Mr. Hamed, any comments?
Oops, sorry about that. Sorry about that. Oops. I don't see a violation of here whatsoever. It looks like there was a little bit of carelessness on the patient's part for not showing up the day after as requested. So they run that risk. And also, it looks like the good doctor here provided a full refund, which, you know, he went above and beyond. He didn't have to do that, but he did. And so, therefore, I don't see a violation whatsoever of the Optometric Practices Act.
Thank you. I'll also state for the record that I don't see any violations here. With regard to the patient calling different providers, I mean, one way that I interpreted this, just for the record, is that if you have a history with a patient and they have a history of switching their lenses, or you're aware that they've self-inoculated with hand sanitizer, maybe you tell them, yeah, let's just stay away from ClearCare, because accidents can happen with ClearCare. So this seems reasonable to me why she would call one office and get this advice in another office and say, yeah, you can use that with a soft contact lens. It seems completely reasonable to me. In addition, with the complaint, she said that it was 3 or 4 days later after she self-inoculated with the hand sanitizer, and then she noticed some little rainbows. To me, if the patient had had an immediate concern after self-inoculating with hand sanitizer, that's when I would have seen her. If she had told me, yeah, I didn't have any problems for 3 or 4 days, then I noticed rainbows, I would have thought, yeah, you know, you're probably just fine at this point. You probably don't need to come in. So that would have been my interpretation at that stage also. So I don't see any concerns here with regard to Dr. Goldman's care. Would anyone like to make a motion?
This is Dr. Brown. I move that we dismiss this complaint because it does not, that we find no infraction of the Optometric Practice Act.
Second.
Thank you. We've had a motion and a second to dismiss the complaint, IR202431 against Dr. Goldman. Any further discussion? Okay, we'll take a vote. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Aye.
Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
Oh, I didn't hear you.
Aye.
Thank you, Dr. Cohen. Dr. Mastores?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 5-0. So we'll jump ahead to number five, Dr. Christopher White, IR number 202505. Would someone on the board like to offer a summary?
This is Dr. Mastores. I'll summarize. So this is IR number 202505, Dr. White, patient SR, date of exam August 6, 2024. Patient SR wanted to have an exam to get a new prescription and address concerns about flashes and floaters. She went to a Stanton Optical and had a remote exam, I guess, telehealth remote exam. Not really sure what they call it. Tests were performed with a technician. The patient reports the tech read from a script. Was told a doctor reviewed and created an RX. At the end, she was referred, I believe, elsewhere for another exam for the floaters. The patient reports she felt that it was a scam. She had to go get another exam. She reports she had no interaction with a doctor in person or remotely. That's my summary, yes.
Thank you. So is patient SR present? Okay. Dr. White, I see you're present. Do you have legal counsel here with you as well?
No.
Okay. I can't hear you, just so you know. I saw your lips move, but I didn't.
Oh, no.
Okay, good. There we are.
Okay, okay.
Would you like to take a moment and address comments towards the board?
Yeah, yeah. So in this case, whenever a patient comes in with the flashes and floaters, we cannot, as the telehealth exam, judge whether anything is going on. So we will refer out as needed to another doctor for the dilation. In this case, I was available and I am available to the patients, but unfortunately the technician didn't get a hold of me to tell me that the patient was wanting to talk to me. So we're re-educating the stores to let them know that that's the way it's supposed to go and that this won't happen again.
Okay. Does that conclude your comments?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
Let me ask you, well, let's close open discussion. I'll open this up for board discussion. We can discuss amongst ourselves and then ask questions if we have it. I'll ask you one quick question, Dr. White. This patient mm-hmm. is a diabetic in their health form. What's your policy about dilating a diabetic?
Well, we do take pictures of the back of the eye. So I do have fundus views of mm-hmm. the back of the eye. Generally, if I do see some risk factors with it, I will send it out. This time it didn't happen. And the store just didn't get a hold of me on that part. But with the respect to the diabetic concern, I didn't see any concern in the back of the eye from what the fundus photos were. So that was totally fine on my side.
But they're only fundus photos. They're not wide field photos.
Correct. Correct.
Okay. All right. Thank you. So I'll open this up for the board for discussion.
This is Dr. Mistress. I have another question for Dr. White. Mm-hmm. On the side of the records we got, there was like, it was like 12:08 a.m., 10:58 p.m., like kind of recording a timestamp. So how does it work? Like, were you doing the chart while the patient's there, or do you look at yes. it later? Like, how
it
does
is it asynchronous. It is sent to me directly as the patient is done. So okay. sometimes if I click on it, it's possible that it might collect my timestamp right there, but I'm not sure why it had the different timestamp right there, but I was there and it was a momentary move over to me. And she had the prescription minutes after being done with the exam there.
Okay. And then, so the timestamp might be just a bad time. Like
yes.
you're not practicing at 10 PM.
No, no.
Okay.
No.
My other question is there a way for you to, Zoom like this during yes. it, or would it all yes. be like a phone call? Okay.
No, it would be a Zoom like this. And I do it quite frequently with several patients. It's just that this time, the technician didn't tell me about their concerns.
But that's only for conversation, right? It's just to talk to the patient. This is the venue you use to talk to the patient.
Correct. It's okay. It's a conference with the patient.
And do they do like a, does the technician do a slit lamp that you watch, or is it just the anterior seg photo?
It's the anterior seg photos.
Okay.
This is Dr. Brown. I've got a couple questions.
Mm-hmm.
So when you finish, since you get that exam pretty immediately, you noticed then when you looked at it that there was no tonometry recorded?
There was tonometry, I believe.
Was there?
Yes.
I must have missed it.
Nope, I didn't see it either.
Thank you. I didn't
see it.
I also
yeah,
did.
it's 12 and 13 millimeters mercury under tonometry. In the chart.
I think we're missing something because yeah, it doesn't.
Oh, okay.
I think we're also like her prior spec is just blank. And
we don't have lensometry recordings. We don't have autorefractor recordings. We don't have keratometry recordings. We don't have tonometry.
The anterior. I'll send that page over to you.
Yeah.
This would be the time. okay. That ends my questions for the doctor.
Yeah.
Margaret, I just want to ask Margaret, You don't see it in your packet of information that I sent over?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay. I printed out exactly what I sent to you guys, and I have it right here.
So in our, I'm going to state for the record real quick what's missing, Dr. White, just so you know. So we have a page that shows the test and then no results. And here's what's missing. The autorefract, keratometry, tonometry, anterior segment was simply an external photo, which is not anterior segment imaging, as is supposed to be. And then, of course, just the fundus photo for a retinal exam. And this patient also is a diabetic, not dilated. There was also no indication in the record, although you said it and the patient admitted it, that you referred her for a flashes and floaters complaint. The record does not reflect a referral to retina, and it doesn't reflect any kind of referral based on her diabetic status. So it's grossly missing many elements.
In the complaints from the patient itself, it was asked if she has any problems with flashes and floaters, and I do not see any issues with that.
So yeah, she admitted and you admitted that she was referred on that basis. And so
the store told me later that she brought up the concern after the exam.
So it's just that your record. So I'm trying to impress upon you something that your record
is
significantly lacking. And if your record doesn't reflect this, had she not said it, this would have been an automatic complaint against you that your record does not reflect this. So your records need to reflect what is said to the patient and what referrals you give. Very important. So
I can send over that page of information for you.
Do we want to, Dr. Brown?
So even with all of those, with the grossly inadequate anterior seg evaluation, with the poor charting, the one thing that really has me concerned is that dilation is not an option for patients who show up to this practice, that they have to then go somewhere else and pay someone else to receive the care that is supposed to be done or provided by anyone, at least available to anyone presenting. And so the fact that this isn't even available, I find to violate the Practice Act and causes me great concern.
I do too, Dr. Brown. I'll back you up with some statutes here real quick. This does not meet the vision examination standards. So R4-21-304, regardless of how you deliver your care, you're responsible for the care delivered, and this does not suffice. It does not meet vision examination standards. Also 32-1701, any conduct or practice, including incompetency that constitutes a danger to the health, welfare, or safety of the patients of the public. This does not care for patients. This does not provide the adequate care. This is a diabetic. She's not dilated. That wasn't even commented on in her record that she needed to be referred on that basis. A fundus photo. We just had a case with a malignant melanoma in the back of the eye where two doctors missed a malignant melanoma for years with fundus photography. Fundus photo does not suffice for retinal imaging. It just does not. The AOA standard guidelines of care include dilation at this point. If you don't have a wide field analysis or photo, it just does not qualify. That does not work. And also this is conduct that discredits the profession, as far as I'm concerned. Makes us all look bad. In addition, 32-1743, A4 and A11. My thoughts on this, and I'm just tossing this out for everybody to consider. I think we should offer a consent agreement. I think in this case, that we should put Dr. White on probation with an audit and audit his records for 6 months, and that, a continuing education order is due. So those are my thoughts.
This is Dr. Brown. I agree with your thoughts. Am I missing the fact that dilation is not offered at all at this location? Does that disqualify?
I mean, you can't possibly provide standard of care for every patient.
So I'm for also a suspension of license. I mean, I'm fine with what I'm just baffled that we can offer care remotely without dilation, without, I'm just really disappointed with this. And
I'll tell you also one thing, Dr. Brown, why I thought probation, because then we could audit and we could see if this is done. And so then we can gather more records and then we can go after the license if we need to. And I hate to make an example of you, Dr. White, but this is not adequate care and this will need to change if telehealth is
surviving. I agree with your arguments. I'm persuaded.
Anyway, that was the strategy with the audit so that we could collect records.
This is Dr. Messeris. That's one thing I wish the patient was here, because my question is like, why choose a remote exam? Like, why would a consumer, a patient choose that route, especially if they have complaints of floaters and flashes, they're a high myope, their husband's had a retinal tear. I want to put a little bit on the patient in that, why did you select a telehealth exam for your care? It's just a question I have in my mind. I'm sorry.
Dr. Cohen, any comments?
Yeah, the ability to offer for very basic routine things to offer telehealth with teleoptometry may be reasonable, but this is a patient that already has pre-existing issues that require the optimal level of care. And you cited before the case we dealt with the melanoma, and I think what was identified, it was about maybe with fundus photos compared to like optos, you see maybe 20% of the retina. And although you can look at it and say that area looks devoid of any blot and dot hemorrhages or anything else, you can't make that statement definitively, as many of these things are out in the periphery. So that's concerning about a fundus photo sufficing for a retinal evaluation for someone who has a pre-existing condition.
Ms. Whalen has her hand up.
Mr. Hamed, any comments?
It concerns me that a patient would go and do a telehealth appointment for your vision, for your eyes. I don't know. That concerns me a little bit on the end of the patient's part, if you will, and things like that, if you will. And I don't know. I'm a little baffled by this overall. I'm baffled on it. But then again, let's see what Miss Whalen has to say too. I'd like to hear what she has to say. Let's hear the council's point.
You have your hand up, Margaret.
Yes, thank you, Madam President, for acknowledging me, and thank you, members of the board. I just wanted to point out, I know you haven't solidified your discussion, your motion, but you can do probation and suspension. The two are not mutually exclusive, so that's on the table. And also, I would just recommend a practice monitor as opposed to just a straight up audit. An audit is usually done by staff. We can do it. We're not as professional, knowledgeable as the optometrist doing the practice monitoring. So if you would just at least take that into consideration, that would be appreciated.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
So I suggested to the board then practice monitor with probation for 6 months and a CE order of 10 hours. We have agreement on that. Does anyone like to offer an alternative suggestion?
So you will scrap the audit, correct?
I'm not sure what you mean by that. So the practice monitor
There's two different things. There's a monitoring and an audit. An audit is a review. A monitor is to make sure and check everything they've done. So do you want the audit and the monitor or just the monitor?
So I want the monitor, and they will audit 10 charts a month, and they will give us the review of those charts. And so we will see that monthly to review Dr. White's care.
And this is Dr. Messeris. Can we have an explanation of probation versus suspension of license, what that exactly means?
So I guess I meant probation for 6 months with a practice monitor so that we can see those charts and see the results of the work, and then a CE order of 10 hours also.
And what would the CE be in, Dr.
I think this Moffitt? Is... question. I would say in pathology. I would leave that open for different areas, but I would say pathology. And it should be diverse pathology. It shouldn't just all be in one area.
I don't think we can leave it open. I think we have to be specific.
So I generally, when we have one of these orders, the doctor submits those CE that they're contemplating to Margaret, and then it comes to me, and then I can influence what is chosen so that it's diverse. So that's usually how this goes. Should we specify, Margaret, or make it more clean than that?
Madam President, I think it's sufficient to have pathology in general. You don't want to exclude anything by making it too specific. I do understand Mr. Hamed's point, but I think there's enough pathology courses that are relevant to this particular instance.
Okay, great. Yeah, we're looking for cornea, retina, optic nerve disease, those things.
What does probation mean?
Oh. Go ahead, Margaret.
Thank you, Madam President, Dr. Mastoris, members of the board. So probation is necessary when the board wants to have something like a practice monitor or to audit records or to review records. We need that probationary period to have authority to do so. The suspension is separate. The suspension is exactly that. It is no work for however many days the license is suspended, and then the probationary period starts upon the doctor's return to practice. And that is for however long the board feels that it's going to take the event to be rectified and to make sure that the doctor is, pardon?
I'm sorry. I thought you were done, Margaret. So I was just saying for Dr.
Oh, Margaret, I am now.
My proposal was 6 months.
Margaret, do we have any complaints against this doctor at all, of the board, a history of complaints at all?
Thank you, Mr. Hamed. There is none.
Thank you.
So I've suggested a practice monitor for a probation period of 6 months and 10 hours of CE. Dr. Cohen, let's see what you think. Do you agree with that? Disagree? Do you have an alternative suggestion?
No, I agree. The only have we ever put in for a requirement on any of the CE for record keeping?
That's a big one. Good point.
That would be great.
So can we say,
record keeping? We don't have a motion yet, so we can absolutely do that.
So I think the general pathology is good to understand. Like if you're doing it on diabetes, to understand what the better understand the consequences and how to evaluate. But the record keeping is part of it. Even the fact that we have a record here that all these are blank, that is supposed to be exactly the same record the doctor has. So yeah, I think the record keeping is part of it, which will also be helped. I think it'll be a great learning experience through the practice monitor because they'll be able to look at specific cases and get understanding of what things are there and what aren't.
Dr. Mastoris, do you have thoughts on a practice monitor for 6 months and continuing education of 10 hours?
I completely agree.
Okay. Dr. Brown, thoughts on that or alternative suggestions?
Ms. Whalen has her hand up again.
Oh, Margaret.
Thank you, Dr. Brown, for, excuse me, seeing the little hand in the corner there. I would just ask the board, please, when you were discussing to delineate out the number of hours for the record keeping.
Okay.
Within that 10 or above and beyond the 10.
Okay.
Thank you.
This is Dr. Brown. I'm fine with what's been discussed and proposed.
Okay. Mr. Hamed, any comments?
Yeah, I'm fine with what's being proposed.
Okay. So then I'll offer a motion that we offer a consent agreement to Dr. White. In view of a violation of R4-21-304, 32-1701G and O, 32-1743, A4 and A11. The consent.
Madam President?
Yes.
Pardon me. It is actually 32-1701-8G and O.
Okay.
Thank you. Just okay. Clarification.
Yes.
Thank
you. Yes. And the consent agreement would offer a 6 month probation period with a practice monitor. Go ahead, Mona.
Yes, Madam President, members of the board, you have discussed whether or not his records met the standard of care for documentation. Mm-hmm. So if you do plan to have him go ahead and fulfill continuing education related to documentation and record keeping, you may want to consider failing to maintain or submit records as required by the board. And that would be under 32-1743-A16.
Okay. So I'll add that then to my motion, failing to maintain and submit the records 32-1743-A16. The consent agreement would be for a 6-month probation period with a practice monitor and continuing education, a total of 10 hours, 3 in record keeping or thereabouts, 7 in pathology or thereabouts. Is there a second?
This is Dr. Brown. I second.
And if not signed, proceed to an informal proceeding. Yes. And if not signed, and if not accepted, move to a formal hearing.
Absolutely. If not signed and agreed to, we would move towards an informal proceeding. And if not agreed to or signed and agreed to, we would move towards a formal proceeding.
Dr. Brown, I second.
Thank you. Further discussion? Okay, we've had a motion and a second. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
I vote aye.
Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
I didn't hear you, Dr. Cohen.
Aye.
Thank you. Dr. Mastores?
Aye.
I didn't hear you either. I don't know.
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 5-0. Agenda item F4, Dr. Lassie, IR202504. Is patient RL or RL's present or parents present?
Present.
And Dr. Lassie, are you present?
I am present.
Thank you. Do you have counsel present, Dr. Lassie?
I do not.
All right, can I have a board summary of this case? You know, I can offer it. I'll go ahead and offer it. Patient RL's father filed a complaint claiming that Dr. Lassie misdiagnosed RL with astigmatism. At initial presentation, 7/11/23, patient RL had 8 prism diopters of esophoria, a topographic map that showed 1.75 diopters of cylinder in the left eye, and cover testing showed alignment with trial framing of prescription. Patient was rechecked at dispense on 7/21/23, and OS was a constant esotropion now with a fixed EOM restriction. Dr. Lassie advised RL's mother to take the patient to the ER for emergent MRI or have the patient's father an MRI as he is a hospitalist if they were more comfortable with that. On July 22nd, 23, Dr. Lassie called to inquire if the MRI was performed, so one day following. The father thought the MRI was not indicated without a second opinion. On 7/24, 2 days later, Dr. Lassie called ABC pediatric eye specialist and referred the patient for an immediate evaluation. That practice called the patient's family to schedule directly. On July 28, 2023, the MRI was scheduled. On August 2nd, the mother called and informed Dr. Lassie of the Chiari malformation and wanted to know if the glasses would help. Dr. Lassie said no. On 9/5/2023, mother requested a refund on both of her daughters as she had brought another child in for glasses as well. Requested a refund on both daughters' glasses. Dr. Lassie gave one pair a refund as a professional courtesy as the glasses were already made. That will cover my summary. Patient's father, CL, if you would like to address the board, this is your opportunity.
Good morning. The beginning of the time frame is a bit off. There's a whole bunch of conversation I don't believe actually happened in that fashion. The MRI was never requested of me.
I just didn't hear you. Could you repeat that? The MRI what?
The MRI was never requested from me. The MRI was requested from the optometrist at ABC Pediatrics. After she did her exam and did not find any evidence of astigmatism.
Okay. Do you have further comments?
In my opinion, the diagnosis originally set off a whole cascade of issues that we have dealt with for the last year or so. She's had to undergo further surgery to correct her alignment. That happened September 11th. She's still recovering from that.
Does that conclude your comments, patient CL, or excuse me, Mr. Dr. CL?
For now, yes.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Lassie, would you like to take this opportunity to address the board?
Hi, thank you for letting me address the board. So yeah, the patient came in on 7/11 and it presented as a refractive eye turn. So I treated it as a refractive eye turn. We did have a FaceTime conversation with the father, but that was the last time I spoke to him. All other conversations were done with the mother. So yeah, it wasn't directly requested from him. I informed her that she may be able to do that. So he's correct. I did not tell him directly to go give him and give her an MRI, but I did tell the mother to go to the ER or have the father do submit for an MRI the day that I saw them a week after. I'd just like to point out that the eye turn was present, very much so, and he lived with the patient at the time and an MRI was not done. I specifically was the only doctor that pushed for an MRI. And if there was any delays, it was caused by their desire to get a second opinion for any other reason. So that concludes my comments.
Thank you, Dr. Lassie. So we'll close open discussion now and open this up for board discussion. Comments from the board?
This is Dr. Brown. I read through and saw that there was an eye turn, and I found it important to note that Dr. Lassie demonstrated to the mother that there was correction of that eye turn with glasses. And so to put the glasses on, correct the eye turn, and to then wait 10 days to see if that holds was not inappropriate, in my opinion. When they came back and found that the symptoms had changed from how they had presented, the next step was taken for an emergency MRI recommendation. I guess the argument here is that there should have been a diagnosis at the first, and then there would have been a 10-day catch. But apparently that wasn't very important because we waited another 7 days for a second opinion to then finally get the MRI done. So I don't find that Dr. Lassie has done anything wrong here. And if the delay is unfortunate, this is more than likely a congenital condition, and I don't believe that any of her actions are culpable for where we are today. That's my.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. Dr. Mestoris, comments?
Yes, this one also broke my heart, just because it's a child, and I know seeing all the surgery she's been through, she probably does have astigmatism, and it may come up later in her life. So I think that there's been no violation, but it's a very sad case. Yeah.
Thank you. Dr. Cohen, any comments?
Yes, I'd like to ask Dr. Lassie, the calls made to follow up after the recommendation for the MRI were unilateral on your part. They weren't triggered by anything other than you're looking to follow up to see what the status was?
Yes, thank you for your question, Dr. Cohen. I was very emotional about this situation just because typically Carey malformations are not diagnosed so late. When I spoke to the mother later and learned she had recurrent headaches as a child and it was kind of a thing and an MRI was never done, that shocked me to the core. And I think that my reactions thereafter and calling and following up thereafter was just because I myself was somewhat of a neglected child, and I would have loved for somebody to, I would have loved for somebody to have pushed as much as I did for certain things that were done. So I took it very seriously, and it was done by me. Yes.
Well, thank you for the answer, Dr. Lassie, and for that personally to take this. I would think that if you gave a strong recommendation for an MRI and the parents reasonably said we'd like a second opinion, that maybe that could have been discussed with you, because you might have facilitated that even sooner to get that patient in, which you took action on afterwards. But I appreciate any colleague who takes the time to follow up with a patient on their own to make sure everything is going well. And, you know, it is a very unfortunate situation, but I don't think that you're accountable for where things are.
I'm going to offer my thoughts also, just for the record. Here was my impression reviewing this case. So as the patient presented at initial visit, the chief complaint was blurred vision in the left eye. There was an objective measure of astigmatism in the left eye. We saw the map showing 1.75 diopters of sill on that cornea. A subjective refraction also indicated an improvement in vision with that, and an 8 prism diopter esophoria at presentation with no EOM restriction. So this is very much, you know, a child can present this way. There's nothing abnormal about this presentation, and there's nothing inappropriate, in my opinion, about prescribing glasses to see if this not only helps the vision, but helps with the alignment of the eye. The first step that you would usually take if you had a child that was having a misalignment is to offer best corrected visual acuity in that eye and see if that helps hold the eye into alignment. So there is absolutely nothing inappropriate about this. I do want to commend Dr. Lassie. She saw the patient at dispense of glasses. That's not something I usually do, just to be clear. I would have had the patient wear the glasses and come back and see me after a little bit of time. I felt like she was immediately on top of this issue and very attentive and caring of the patient. At that point, when she saw a problem, she asked for an emergent image. It was the parent's decision to withhold that imaging and to delay care. There was absolutely no sign that Dr. Lassie was the holdup. In addition, she got on the phone, found a second opinion, waited. We saw the phone records, waited on the phone to get a doctor or to get a technician to get a referral in place, and had them call directly to the patient's home to get the patient in for care. Then followed up to make sure that the patient was seen, and followed up again to see what were the results of the MRI. This is exactly what you want to see in your doctors, is this kind of consistent and constant attention to detail and looking after the welfare of the child. So I am disappointed to see this complaint drawn. I see absolutely no sign of Optometric Practice Act violation here. And I commend Dr. Lassie on her excellent care for this patient. Those are my thoughts.
Yeah, this is Dr. Cohen from my dad.
Can I interject there?
So I'm usually not, but I'll give you an opportunity if you'd like to say something.
Sure. How would you account for the discrepancy in the diagnosis from astigmatism initially and then the lack of astigmatism subsequently seen at ABC Pediatrics?
Also
noting that it was ABC Pediatrics and Dr. Ferreira, I believe, was that ordered the MRI and recommended the MRI.
So it's clear in the record, actually, that Dr. Lassie spoke with your wife about an MRI. So that's number one. And the response to her was that, frankly, you thought that wasn't indicated and that you were the delay and wanted a second opinion.
That's not true. It's not.
Okay. This is the conversation. But it's clear that an MRI was indicated. And it's also clear that Dr. Lassie referred your patient or your daughter to specialist after that. With regard to the astigmatism, you can absolutely have an objective measure. So we have an objective measure of astigmatism. It's no doubt present. But that does not mean that the patient will or will not take it on subjective refraction. So this is the difference, an objective measure of astigmatism versus a subjective refraction. But Dr. Lassie has both. So it's very clear. And your daughter had blurred vision at presentation that cleared with subjective refraction. The fact that she kicked it out later, we have patients that will go up and down on astigmatism. This is why Dr. Mestores made the comment earlier that she just wait and see, this astigmatism will come out later because it's present on the cornea. So it's not a misdiagnosis. The presentation justifies what was done. This matches. It makes perfect sense. You can't look in the rearview mirror and say, I should have known then what I know now, just because she followed up and then her eye was fixed and immobile. That does recommend emergent imaging. But an 8 prism diopter esophoria with 1.75 diopters of sill on the left eye, a presenting vision of 20/60 that improves to 20/20 with subjective refraction, suggest everything was done appropriately. There's not a, there's no one here that would have done it differently, including the ophthalmologist or the optometrist that you saw at the pediatric office. The information changed.
I don't think it did. I think the information was exactly the same.
Yeah. This is Dr. Brown. One of the things that I note, we have an impending constant esotropia that is getting worse. To have that increasing pull on the eye could easily cause a change in refraction from day to day, from week to week. And so we can have the discussion all day long about whether the astigmatism was there or not. The reality is nothing was done wrong. Standard of care was met. Everything was done to try and treat this patient. The eye corrected straight ahead, vision cleared up. There was no indication to the doctor that there should be anything else done. So even with or without astigmatism, whether we agree in the refraction, the care met standards and went above.
This is Dr. Mestores. I'd like to note that on the pediatric ophthalmology visit, they didn't even do unaided acuity. They only took acuity through the glasses, and she was 20/20 in both eyes. So the glasses worked. It just, you know, may not have been, you know, that wasn't the main issue. So,
yeah. And the esotropy had worsened. They measured 40 prism diopter esotropy at that visit. It had clearly changed in the time between initial visit and subsequent second opinion. So I would like to, if this suffices for discussion, I would like to offer a motion that we dismiss the complaint against Dr. Lassie, IR202504.
I'll second.
A violation of the Optometric Practice Act.
Madam President, I'll second the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Hamed. Any further discussion? We've had a motion and a second to dismiss the complaint against Dr. Lassie. I'll say it again for the record. Dr. Lassie, it looks like you provided excellent care to this patient. Let's go ahead and have a roll call vote. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Aye.
Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
Dr. Mestores?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 5-0. All right. Complaint F6 against Dr. Richard Bullen, IR number 202506. Is patient CK present?
Yes.
Okay. And Dr. Bullen present?
I'm present, yes.
Thank you. Is counsel for Dr. Bullen present?
No, I'm representing myself.
Okay, thank you. Can I have a board summary of Dr. Bullen's complaint?
This is Dr. Mestores. I can do that. So this is IR number 202506, Dr. Bullen and patient CK. She was seen in the office on June 12, 2024. She had an exam with the doctor and then went to the optician. She had the optician call her optician back in San Diego to get information on the patient's preferred glasses. After they discussed all that, she asked for her glasses to be adjusted. When the optician took it back, she heated the lenses, which melted them in some way, damaging them, and the patient was no longer able to see through them. The practice made some temporary lenses for the patient, but she couldn't see out of those either. There was a big to-do, and Dr. Bullen's wife, the office manager, was involved. There was a discussion about cameras being used and a possible HIPAA violation. There was discussion about the doctor not having to ask his wife what to do and saying that he couldn't do it, his wife would be mad. The patient told the doctor to get some balls. There was a couple weeks delay in the glasses. There was some discrepancy on labs. There was a lot going on here. And that is my summary.
Thank you. Patient CK, would you like to take this opportunity to address the board?
Yes, I would. Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
So I did go in to get, I had to get a new doctor here because I was always with the military and I was moving around. So now that I'm retired, I decided to go to him. And I did go in what the other doctor just said, and they did melt the glasses. And I asked the doctor, Bullen, if he would do something about getting me a pair, because I had an extra pair. And if I didn't have that extra pair, I don't know what I would have done because I couldn't have seen anything. So he says, you have to pay for it. And I says, no, you need to take care of my glasses. You melted them. You're a technician. And he sat there and just had a meltdown saying that he wasn't going to take care of him. His wife is in charge of everything. She's not going to allow me to do this. And so you're going to have to pay. So it just went on and on. And then I ended up going in the next day to talk to him because I used my old glasses. But the thing is, I have a pair of frames. I don't know if I'm supposed to explain this whole thing, but it's hard for me to, because there's so much, to stick to one point. But I went in with a pair of glasses, which were these glasses. These are the ones they melted. And I was going to take these glasses, which are an old frame, to see if they could just make me a new prescription. And so when they melted these, the wife took care of everything and said that, well, you're going to have to use your insurance if you want a new pair of glasses. And then we'll go ahead and fix the ones we melted. So I waited for 2 weeks. And she kept calling me on the phone over and over again. And I mean, it's such a long story. It's all there in my report. The end result was I went in. She called me and said, your glasses are ready. You can come get them. I went in there. And the first thing the guy did was hand me a letter saying, don't come back here again. We didn't do anything. You know, these glasses right here, she sent them and got them fixed. And I can't see out of the ones that they got fixed. I've got 4 prescriptions here from that doctor's office. I don't even know why I have 4 prescriptions with their name on it. And I don't even know, like, which prescription is which, because the ones that they said they sent out, I can't see out of them. So they didn't do anything to these. They just handed them back to me and says, we didn't do anything. We didn't charge your insurance. So the thing is that it was just as simple. She said she was going to take the glasses, send them in, get me a new pair, and use my insurance on these. And then I would go ahead and get these fixed, the ones that they melted. But they did nothing when I went in. And so I don't know where he got the prescription for the part that he melted, because I called Hoya Labs. And I talked to Hoya Lab, and I talked to this girl named Andrea, and she said that no prescription has come here to this office. She checked her whole database. She called Dr. Bullen's office and talked to one of the girls there, and they says, no, we didn't send any glasses there. So I don't know where you got that information. She goes, well, you have our name, Hoya Labs, on your paper, on the paperwork with the prescription. So she goes, where did you have her glasses made? And the girl, office girl, says, well, I don't know. And I can't tell you if I did know. So that was it. But it was just simple. If she would have followed through and did what she said she was going to do, I don't know why she made me wait for 2 weeks, but said she was going to do, then everything would have been okay. And I never would have gone back to that office again. Dr. Bullen knows nothing about this, by the way, because he wouldn't talk to me. He refused to talk to me. He said his wife has to take care of everything. She takes care of all the monies. I don't get involved. She's not going to let me send your glasses off and pay for another pair. She won't allow that. And he had his head down, almost like he was going to cry, saying, I can't get into this. I can't. I've had problems since I was grown up, you know, issues of debating people. And said that she's not going to allow me to pay for any glasses. She's the boss. She has to take care of it all. And so I had spoken to her, and she told me she was going to get my glasses done and I would use my insurance for the first pair, but that would be the deal. She would fix the pair that they melted, but I would have to use my insurance for these frames, the old frames, because I liked them and they had no frames in their office for me to use. So the thing is, they melted them and they weren't going to do anything to take care of it. but I had agreed to go ahead and use my insurance. Use my insurance for my old frames, and I'll be okay with that. And I'll pay for you. I'll pay for it, which was $300 and some was what's going to be out of my pocket. But then I'll go ahead and get the other pair that we melted and get them fixed. But we're not going to do it unless you get use your insurance for the first pair. So she just falsified everything that she said. And then I go in and there's no glasses. The second thing is I want to really emphasize more than anything too, was that, you know, I'm in the office with him and he was melting down. And I looked at him like something was wrong. Like, you have to get some balls here. You're the boss. You're the doctor. I'm the patient. So it's you are the one to make the decision that you need to send these glasses off. Your office person melted them. And so then he says, well, anyways, going back to the HIPAA violation, she had, when I talked to her, she said that you insulted my husband and told him he needs to get some balls. And I said, well, he does. He looked like he was scared of you. He said, you take care of all the business. So she said that, well, I saw you on camera. I was watching you from home and you had told, and you hurt his feelings. I says, you were watching me from home. And she goes, yes, I have a camera at home and I watch you like I do all my patients. I says, so you were doing the HIPAA violation and you were watching me in my visit with your, with my doctor. She goes, yes, I can do that. And I told her, you can't have cameras watching your patients, you know, with your husband. That's a HIPAA violation. I'm a nurse. I've been a nurse for years and years. And I told her about the HIPAA and she goes, no, that's not true. So I try to educate her on the HIPAA because, you know, it's embedded in us nurses. And so what she did was when she violated me, she was remotely monitoring me from home when I was talking to him in my office. And that's how she heard me say, get some balls. So I was really disturbed that she was allowed to hear me and my doctor talking. That was a violation of my HIPAA rights. That's unlawful. Okay. And that's, you know, she just has access to my personal, you know, unauthorized information. She didn't have any kind of permission from me to be watching me from her home with me and my doctor discussing things. So that's really upsetting to me. And I'm really disappointed because Dr. Bullen, he just lets her take care of everything. And so I want to really emphasize that, express my feelings on the HIPAA, which I believe she really violated. But I have a pair of glasses. These are old glasses, really old. So I can't really see that good out of them, but I have to go back to San Diego now to where I was at Camp Pendleton, get me another pair of glasses and from them, but I hadn't gone because of the heat yet. But the glasses that the wife said she made these and sent them off and I paid a lot of money for them, I can't see out of these. So I took them to Nationwide to look at the prescription and they gave me a prescription on them. And this prescription is not the same one as the three prescriptions that Dr. Bullen has. I don't know where he got the prescription from because he melted the lens. So, and then you have three different prescriptions with your name and your office and his name on the paperwork. So I like to know where he sent these to because he did not send the Hoya Labs in Phoenix since they checked the database and the girl at the office said that they did not have, they were not sent there. So where were they sent? And what prescription is this? Because I can't see out of them. So I feel like they need to replace it and do the right thing. And that's what they should have done to begin with. So I wouldn't have to go through all this because I'm having headaches because of the strain on my eyes, but I have to go to my doctor back to San Diego now. I don't trust any of his prescriptions. They're all different. Every prescription is different. That, and I don't know where he got them all from. I just want to say one thing. When I picked up when I went in thinking I was going to get my new glasses, they handed me four different pair of lens. Where are these lens from? They're not, I only went in with one pair of glasses with one lens. So where do these lens come from? I looked at them and tried to fit them to the glasses, which they fit. So were they testing and making glasses, you know, just to see what would work? I'd just like to know why the wife and him, why Dr. Bullen didn't take care of this because he's a doctor. Why didn't he just say, we'll get you a pair. I'm sorry, we melted the lenses. We'll send them off and just get you a pair. Instead of me having to be forced by the wife to use my insurance, and then I would get the glasses. But it didn't work out that way. It just went around in circles. And she kept calling me and telling me how much they were going to be. They're going to be here at this date. And then she calls and says, they're here. And I go in and they did nothing.
Thank you, patient CK. Does that conclude your statement?
Well, I hope I didn't miss anything, but I did write it all in there.
All right. Thank you. I'm going to, and this will be Dr. Bullen's time to speak now. So Dr. Bullen, do you have any comments for the board?
Yeah. So, there's a lot of misunderstandings in here. I just want to give my side of the story. After the exam was done, I took her out there. The exam was uneventful. Set her down with the opticians, and they went through the whole thing. At the very end is when she asked if they could adjust her glasses for her. So, like, which is very common, they take them back and heat them up to adjust them. My optician didn't realize, though, that she had high index lenses in there, which you're supposed to remove from the frame first before you heat them up. And it ruined the lenses, so she couldn't see out of them. So we have an in-office surfacing unit, a fast grind. I told my lab tech to just remake her a pair of lenses just as a courtesy. And when we took them back out to her, she was like, I can't see out of these. And she says that she only likes high index, the Crizal Sapphire, all the most expensive lenses money can buy. And I was like, hey, I can't make those here. I already made you a pair. We already made you a pair. We have a policy in our and posted on the wall there that says that if you bring in an outside frame and it's damaged during while we're adjusting it, that we're not responsible to replace it. Even though I did try with our in-office lab. But she wasn't happy with that. And I have to discuss all the matters of the money with my wife, who's the business manager first. But she was just very upset that I wanted to discuss with her first. And just talking really bad about the optician that had done it. Just kind of degrading me the whole time. And so, I briefly kind of had talked to my wife about it. We do have cameras in the office. So none of them are in the exam rooms. Two of them are in the optical. There's one over by the front desk and another one in a separate waiting room. So nothing that my wife sees on the cameras is in the exam rooms. It's all out in the open within earshot of all of the other with all other staff members. She is the office manager. Her job is to follow up on issues inside the office, and so she has that right to be able to look and review and see what's happening. We never were discussing issue like really elements about her medical history or anything. We were just talking about the glasses and how she was treating staff members. I agreed with my wife that we were going to still send out and get her replacement lenses. I just used the lensometry values that I got when I read her glasses in initially in the exam before we took her out there, to make the lenses. But I wasn't here for this part, but my wife, when she was talking to her on the phone at one point, she mentioned that, my wife had mentioned to the patient that that she could see her on the cameras and how she was treating the staff, and then she told her that that the patient told my wife that that was a HIPAA violation, and that since we were being nice, that she wouldn't report us or anything like that. And then my wife was like, that wasn't a HIPAA violation. And she's like, do you want to go that route? Because I'll go that route. And as soon as my wife told me that she was talking like that, I was just kind of done helping her. So at that point, we stopped communication. I said, we're going to replace her lenses. We reinstated her benefits fully and gave her a letter to go elsewhere, because I was just kind of done at that point. So as far as the lenses go, we tried to get them from Hoya first, but they didn't have it. So we had to get it from a different lab, which is Luzerne, based in Pennsylvania. And I have that there on my paperwork too. So I think, yeah, that's. So, but I guess the big thing is that, I mean, we made two pairs of lenses for her. That's what those lenses we gave to her there, plus the ones that were melted. We reinstated her benefits. She never paid a dime while she was there. She can go somewhere else and get an eye exam she deserves somewhere. But I'm we just decided that we weren't going to see her anymore.
Madam President, can I ask a few questions of Dr. Bowen?
We can, Mr. Hamed, once we open this up for board discussion. So Dr. Boland, does this conclude your comments?
Yes.
Okay. So this will close open discussion, and I'll open it up to board members now for comments.
Can I say one more thing? Can I please say something?
We're closed on discussion. I mean, we're closed on the statements, actually. It's time for discussion.
Mr. Hamed, one moment. Patient CK, if it's a brief comment, but we're going to ask you questions too in a moment, but go ahead with a brief statement.
It's brief. The sign that he's talking about in the office, there's no sign in the office. It's behind the desk, down the hall, and my sister took the picture and went in and snuck back there to take the picture. Okay? Okay. So you can't see it. It's not in the waiting room. It's down the hall in the back, and he didn't tell me that till after. And the girl that's sitting there says, I know you can't see the sign. It's way back here.
Okay.
And I was never, ever, ever, he's not telling the truth. I was never nasty with any of the people that work there. Never.
Read that in your comments. Just so you know, we've reviewed all the paperwork.
Okay.
We've reviewed everybody's comments already and the exam before we come to
Okay.
Okay. So this will close open discussion, and I'll open this up to board members. Mr. Hamed, now, if you'd like to ask any questions.
Sure. Dr. Bowen, there's been issues brought up about the cameras, and you said they're out in the open. Are those cameras out in open areas where people are in waiting areas, or where are the cameras placed, if you don't mind, if you will? Because they're not in the exam room, you said, but I just want to get a better idea of where the placement of the cameras are at.
I have two in the optical, one by the front desk, and then there's a separate waiting area that's a little bit back through a door. We have one in there as well. And that's all the cameras I have. We had when the company came to put them in, they had to verify that they were in compliant with like laws and everything. So, they're completely in normal spots.
I have a quick question also. I'll just toss out there. And Mr. Hamed, you're free to ask more. I just thought of this. So patient CK, I'd like to know where you were in the office when you had the conversation with Dr. Bowen about your glasses being warped and replacing them. Where were you located?
I was in the exam room.
And you suggest that Dr. Bowen's wife referenced a comment that you made in the exam room to you at a separate time. Is that correct? And she said she saw it on the camera.
Yes, I was sitting on the chair in the exam room, and she said,
"Door open."
Yes,
door was closed.
She said she saw me from home on the cameras and heard the conversation, and said that I called him to get some balls. So that's where she admitted that.
Okay, thank you. All right, other comments from the board or questions?
Are you talking to me?
Nope, just board members right now. Thank you.
Sorry.
Yes, this is Dr. Cohen. Dr. Bowen, the patient described where the signage was about damage done to their own frame. Is that an accurate assessment? Is it readily visible in the optical area, or is it down a hall as she described?
It's behind the front desk. So anyone who's sitting at the front desk will be able to see it on the wall.
No.
With all due respect, CK people, if you're not being asked a question, please mute yourself.
This is Dr. Brown. I have a question for Dr. Bullen. Do you agree that the comments about the warped lenses and her instructions on how you should run your office occurred in the exam room?
Well, there was discussion in the exam room, but also as we were walking to the front, we kind of walked slowly. And we were talking as we were walking through towards the front of the office where more comments were made. And those are the things that my wife would be able to hear on the cameras. So, but yeah, you can't hear anything in the exam rooms on the videos.
Do you have the patients sign a HIPAA disclosure form?
The patients sign a HIPAA form as part of their intake, yes.
Were we provided that?
Let's see here. I can get it for you if it's not in there.
Now's the time.
Let's see here.
I have a question for Ms. Baskin. I don't know if you know the answer to this or not, but does there need to be public signage that you're on camera when you're in a location like that? Even just putting the professional health office aside, do we know if you can, in a public forum like that, be on camera without your consent or knowledge? And is that okay? I mean, I assume that that is not a violation of an individual's rights.
I do not see anything within your statutes regarding that. Mm-hmm. However, if this was done in the rooms where confidential information could be shared, that would fall under HIPAA.
Well, and I wonder a little bit, and I'll say this for the record, and I think Dr. Bullen, you have to be very careful here, but if you have cameras in your office and if they're picking up sound in your exam rooms, whether they're located in there or not, then that is a big concern about a HIPAA violation. So if there was a comment made in the room that is then repeated to the patient subsequently, I understand her concern. I'll bring up a few other issues that I thought were relevant with regard to this. And I'll state for the record that when a patient or anyone else brings a complaint, we review the entire record for any sign of violation of the Optometric Practice Act. It is not necessarily the complaint the patient brings. We may see our own concerns. And a patient in this case was a stated diabetic, but there was no dilation done on exam and no consent that was provided showing that she made informed consent to not be dilated as a diabetic. Standard of care as a diabetic is to be dilated annually. So that's a concern for me when I look at this record review. The comments about the melted lens and replacing the lens, this is more of a business complaint. It doesn't necessarily fall under our purview as far as I am concerned. I think it's unfortunate. And we have an optical in our office that I don't have any kind of ownership of, but I can still ask them to replace a lens and there would be no problem with that. So we do, as a courtesy most of the time for our patients, try to take care of them, particularly if we've caused damage. So that's not the best approach, I would say, is my opinion. But my real concern also is the no dilation, no consent with a diabetic eye exam. This doesn't follow the standard of care. The HIPAA violation is really hard for us to judge based on the location of those cameras. It might have to be filed elsewhere. It admittedly isn't in the exam room, but if patient CK feels like words that she said in the exam room were overheard by the camera that's in a public space, then I think there is a real concern with regard to that. It's the best I can come up with on the HIPAA violation. Those are my thoughts. Dr. Cohen?
I agree with that. I don't see a violation in the statutes, but the where that conversation took place is, I think, appropriate in another forum.
Okay. Dr. Mastores?
I agree.
Dr. Brown?
Thank you, Madam President. A couple, I see also that IOPs were not obtained. No IOPs and no recommendation for follow-up on that. And I just want to comment on the sign, whether it was out there or not, wherever it is, that when you damage something from negligence, not from just accident, that I think that rises to a different level of concern. But I also agree that that's more of a business approach and not the statute. But I don't think that's an adequate defense at this time for that concern. Okay. That's my comments.
I think what, just for patient CK's benefit, what you hear us discussing is we license the doctor and regulate the doctor. And so we're looking for violations against his licensure in the state, but we don't regulate the business per se. Go ahead.
Madam President, hold on. Let me weigh in here, actually.
Okay.
So I agree with you and Dr. Brown, actually, on this. To patient CK, I'm sorry that you had to go through that, but I don't see a violation that sense regarding the glasses. I know where you're coming from. Things happen in transit, if you will, or when being made, when things are just products are destroyed. But regarding the glasses, this isn't the forum for that. Worst case, what you could do is that's where they got Google reviews. If you want to give Dr. Bowen in his office a bad review, that's up to you, what have you, whatnot. But when it comes to the question of retail in this case here, that's a retail. That's not the form for us when it comes to handling such complaints.
Go ahead, Mona. I think you're trying to say something.
Just that, Madam President, members of the board, I just would just refrain from making those types of recommendations on the record, as this
Sorry
is a regulatory
okay.
bill.
I apologize.
Yes, no.
My apology.
No, thank you.
Raylan, you have your hand up.
Wow. Yes, thank you, Dr. Moffitt. Members of the board, I just wanted to point out that if the glasses were damaged by a licensed optician, we can certainly refer that portion of the complaint to the Board of Dispensing Opticians. There has to be at least one licensed optician in the practice, usually. So if that particular optician wasn't licensed, we can still refer to the Board of Dispensing Opticians
okay.
as an option.
That's something on the glasses, yeah. So for my part, I'm just going to offer this for discussion and see if we can all land in a common area. So maybe the board in this case refers this complaint regarding the glasses, at least to the license of dispensing opticians. That would be one way to try and help follow up on the glasses damage. Number two, I would state that a letter of concern with 5 continuing education credits regarding pathology and record keeping. So no IOP in this case, no dilation for a diabetic patient. I find this a violation of R4-21-304. So I think at a minimum that we should assess a letter of concern and 5 continuing education credits towards Dr. Bullen. Those are my thoughts. I'm just going to see anyone else offers any other thoughts. Margaret?
Okay. Thank you, Madam President. Would you be interested in recommending a non-disciplinary order for continuing education?
Yes, that's what I would say. Okay. Sorry. Non-disciplinary CE, 5 hours. Yes.
Thank you.
Dr. Cohen, any thoughts about that?
So you said a mix of pathology and record keeping?
Yes.
A total of 5 in addition to the other the regular requirements. I agree with that. I like having both of those in there.
Great. Dr. Mastores?
This is Dr. Mastores. I also agree. Sounds good.
Wonderful. Dr. Brown?
I agree.
Wonderful. Mr. Hamed?
I do agree.
Okay. Then I would like to make a motion that we offer a non-disciplinary letter of concern along with non-disciplinary CE of 5 continuing education hours of both pathology and record keeping to Dr. Bullen. Okay. Is there a second?
Madam President.
Yes.
Add one thing to your motion, if you wouldn't mind. Also, that a referral be done to the Board of Dispensing Optometry.
Yes, and a referral to the Board of Dispensing Opticians.
Excuse me. Thank you.
Yes, Madam President, members of the board, if we could keep, I'm probably jumping ahead of Ms. Whalen here, but if we could keep the referral separate from the board's motion.
Okay, right. I'll withdraw that point and we can do that separately then.
All right, yes. So can we direct Margaret, please, to refer this complaint towards the board of dispensing opticians? And then I would like to offer or make a motion that we send a letter of concern, a non-disciplinary letter of concern to Dr. Bullen, including non-disciplinary CE of 5 credit hours in both pathology and record keeping. Is there a second?
Wait,
second,
Madam President, excuse me. Is there a time frame that you would like that completed?
I would say within a year. Do we think that's appropriate, everyone? We want sooner than that, 6 months?
Sooner than that, 6 months would be appropriate, I think.
Any other thoughts?
This is Dr. Cohn, do you still need a second?
I'm almost there. Okay. Any minute, I'll be ready for the second. So 6 months, do we think 6 months is a reasonable time frame to obtain that 5 credit hours of CE?
This is Dr. Cohn, I think that 6 months is a reasonable time frame, thank you. Yes.
So we'll give 6 months for that 5 credit hours of CE as a time frame. Is there a second?
Second.
Lovely. Further discussion? All right. We've had a motion and a second. We'll vote. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Aye.
Dr. Brown?
Aye. Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
Dr. Mastores?
Aye.
I didn't hear you, Dr. Mastores.
Aye.
Thank you. And I also vote aye. Motion passes 5-0.
I'm so sorry, you guys. I have to go. Unfortunately, I have a patient. We're just running long. I think you still have quorum.
What do you do,
Margaret? Yeah. Okay. Okay. I'm so sorry.
Okay.
Have a good meeting.
We'll move forward here as expeditiously as we can. Agenda item G, review, discussion, and possible action regarding compliance revision or termination of consent agreement and probationary order.
Hold on 1 second, Madam President. I'm sorry, but Dr. Cohen wrote that he needs to sign off as well. So we're going to lose a quorum, it looks like.
Yeah.
All right, Margaret?
To your call, Madam President, I would like to at least do Dr. Flores, Dr. Goldberg, and the telehealth through item J. If we could at least do that, I would appreciate it. It should be very quick.
I will, this is Dr. Cohen, I'll stay on as long as I can, try to get through those.
So G1, Michael Flores, OD, related to order number 2024-00254. Dr. Juarez and Dr. Flores submitted respective performance reviews for the period of August 1st through September 30th, 2024. Any concerns regarding these reviews? No, I see no's. All right, do we need to have a motion to accept? Yes. So. Would someone like to make a motion to accept these performance reviews for the period 8-1 through 9-30-2024?
Madam President, this is Dr. Brown. I would move that we accept the performance reviews from 8-1 to 9-30-2024.
I'll second.
Thank you. We've had a motion and a second to accept the performance reviews, but from both Dr. Juarez and Dr. Flores regarding Michael Flores related to order number 2024-00254. Any further discussion?
Hang on, we lost Dr. Cohen.
Who? Oh,
killing me. Oh, pardon me, I did not mean to say that out loud. That was.
I wasn't laughing at you, Margaret. I was laughing at something else.
Okay, thank you. okay. I'm going to email Dr. Cohen real quick. I don't know if it was accidental or if he logged off before.
Madam President, I don't think he disliked your motion, so I don't think that's why he signed off.
I don't think I made that motion.
I'm sorry, Dr. Brown. I don't think he signed off due to your lack of due to your motion. I don't think he had a problem with it.
I just emailed, Madam President, I just emailed Dr. Cohen to see if he could come back on for the vote and to finish those last couple. Madam President, if it's all right with you, I'm going to call his office.
Okay.
Would you excuse me for a moment?
Absolutely. I'll just wait. Thank you. Okay, Dr. Cohen is back.
Yeah, this is Dr. Cohen. I apologize. Margaret, I was just trying to call in because my phone is running low, and I put in the number and said the meeting number does not exist.
Oh, okay.
I apologize because I got knocked off and was trying to call in.
I apologize. So are you okay for the moment, or do you need to still call?
Yeah, but if I may have to call in because my battery and my phone's running low. I apologize. And I do have a few extra minutes. I just found out my 10 o'clock patient had to reschedule. So I probably have till about 10:45.
Okay. Let me give you the meeting ID real quick, Dr. Cohen. Can you write it down?
Yes.
852-3161-7404.
7404?
Yep. The passcode is 665-788.
Okay. I'll mute.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. So we were voting, and so we had a motion and a second to accept the submitted performance reviews for period 8-1 through 9-30, 2024 from Dr. Juarez and Dr. Flores regarding Michael Flores OD related to order number 2024-00254. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
I vote aye.
Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
And I also vote aye. Motion passes 4-0. Agenda item H, review, discussion, and possible action on pending license by endorsement applications. Number one, Stephen Goldberg. So this doctor had a previous disciplinary action against his license. Any concerns regarding granting his license by endorsement in Arizona?
Madam President, this is Dr. Brown. I have no problems.
Okay. Dr. Cohen, any concerns?
No concerns.
Thank you. I also have no concerns. Mr. Hamed, any concerns?
No concerns, Madam President.
I'd like to offer I'd like to move that we accept Dr. Stephen Goldberg's license pending endorsement. Is there a second?
Madam President, Dr. Brown, I second.
Thank you. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
I vote aye.
Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 4-0. Agenda item I, review, discussion, and possible action on pending license by telehealth applications. We have an application from Dr. Tiffany Chrissy. Any concerns regarding granting Dr. Chrissy a license to practice in the state of Arizona via telehealth?
Madam President, this is Dr. Brown. I have concerns after seeing the chart from today from other telehealth, but I don't think we have a choice.
I think you're right. Dr. Cohen, any concerns? think he's calling in right now.
No, yeah, okay. No concern.
Mr. Hamed, any concerns?
No concerns.
Okay. Would someone like to offer a motion?
Madam President, Dr. Cohen has his hand up. Is that intentional?
I apologize. I pressed the wrong button. To unmute, I know I pressed star 6. Margaret, what is it to mute again? Do you know?
Oh, Margaret's on mute.
Oh. I do not know, Dr. Cohen. I'm sorry. I don't usually call into the meeting, so.
Okay. I think I got it. Thank you. Okay. I have no concern. I think I'm okay.
Okay. Would someone like to offer a motion regarding Dr. Tiffany Chrissy's license?
Madam President, this is Dr. Brown. I move that we approve Dr. Tiffany Chrissy's telehealth license.
Thank you. Second. Any further discussion? So we've had a motion and a second to accept Dr. Tiffany Chrissy's license to practice telehealth in Arizona. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Aye.
Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 4-0. Agenda item J, review, discussion, and possible action on pending license applications awaiting fingerprint reports, request for board approval pursuant to ARS 32-1730. Number one, Keila Gangapreet. Number two, Stephen Goldberg. Any concerns regarding granting these applicants their Arizona license while DPS report's still pending?
No concerns, Madam President.
Okay. Dr. Brown?
No concerns.
Dr. Cohen?
No concerns.
I also have no concerns. Would someone like to offer a motion?
Madam President, I'm going to move that we grant the licenses pending the of applicants one and two, pending the background of the DPS fingerprint clearance background process.
I think it's not pending the DPS reports, but we're granting them although they're still pending.
Okay, fair enough. We will use that wording. That's fine.
Okay. I would second. Is there any further discussion? Okay. So we've had a motion and a second to accept the applicants, Dr. Keila Gangapreet and Dr. Stephen Goldberg, with regard to their licenses while DPS reports still pending. Further discussion? Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Aye.
Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 4-0. Agenda item K, executive director approval of new license applications pursuant to ARS 32-3123. Applicants 1A through 1I were approved during the period of July 31st through October 2nd, 2024. Agenda item L, review, discussion, and possible action on approval of testing center for proctoring of jurisprudence exam pursuant to AAC R4-21-203C. Number one and number two, the testing and proctoring center in Ashburn, Virginia. And number two is Valley Park Library, Valley Park, Missouri. Any concerns regarding approving these sites as a testing center for the jurisprudence exam?
Madam President, Dr. Brown, I have no concerns.
Thank you. Dr. Cohen?
No concerns.
Mr. Hamed?
No concerns.
I also have no concerns. Would someone like to offer a motion? I would move that we accept L1 and L2 for jurisprudence testing locations for the Arizona exam. Is there a second?
Second.
Go ahead, Sam.
Any further discussion? Okay, we've had a motion and a second to accept number one, testing and proctoring center in Ashburn, Virginia, and number two, Valley Park Library, Valley Park, Missouri, as testing centers for the jurisprudence exam for the Arizona applicants. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Aye.
Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 4-0. Agenda item M, review, discussion, and possible vote on request from the Council on Optometric Practitioner Education for approval of course reviewers. Number one, COPE reviewer request letter submitted on behalf of Dr. Alex Smith. Any concerns regarding Dr. Smith acting as a COPE reviewer?
No concerns.
Okay. Dr. Cohen?
No concerns.
Mr. Hamed?
No concerns.
I also have no concerns. Would someone like to offer a motion?
Madam President, this is Dr. Brown. Do we have to, are we required to do something?
Margaret? We're always, this is what Margaret says, we're always better to offer a motion. It's clean.
Okay.
Thank you.
Vote on it.
Yes. It just shows that the board has put it on the public record that they do accept and approve the person. So okay. Thank you, Dr. Brown, for asking.
Would someone like to offer a motion?
Yes, this is Dr. Cohen. I move that we accept Dr. Alex Smith as a COPE reviewer.
Well, I second. Any further discussion? So we've had a motion and a second to accept Dr. Alex Smith as a COPE reviewer. Any further discussion? Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Aye.
Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 4-0. Agenda item N, review, discussion, and possible vote on utilizing the MBO online state law exam to meet the requirements of AAC R4-21-203. Number one, MBO online state law exam, administration of the Arizona jurisprudence exam. Are there any concerns or discussion regarding allowing the MBO online version of the Arizona jurisprudence exam to be administered?
Madam President, Dr. Brown, I just have a question. Is it going to be the same test?
Yes.
I have no concerns.
Neither do I. Dr. Cohen?
I have no concerns.
Mr. Hamed, any
concerns? No concerns.
Great. Would someone like to offer a motion?
Madam President.
This is Dr. Cohen. I'll make a motion that we accept the NBEO online state exam administration of Arizona jurisprudence exam.
Wonderful. Is there a second?
This is Dr. Brown. I second.
Any further discussion? So we've had a motion and a second to accept the NBEO online state law exam administration of the Arizona jurisprudence exam. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Aye.
Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 4-0. I don't know if we want to do this or not, but so agenda item O, election of officers pursuant to the provisions of the ARS 32-1703A. Number one, position of president.
Can we hold off on that maybe to our next meeting if possible? This is we have other board members. It's only fair to have the other ones present.
It's fine with me. I just don't know what the timing looks like here. We did this at the last meeting. Also, we put it off. So I don't know if we have time to put it off further. Margaret, do you have an opinion on that?
Thank you, Madam President. I do have an opinion. it is an annual election. We usually do it in June. So the start of the fiscal year, that's when most of your terms coincide with the fiscal year. But as long as you are willing to continue serving as the president and Dr. Mastorius, who is not here, will continue to serve as the vice president until the election, it's fine.
Okay. So
it's been
I don't
know. As previously, so we have a record that we've been trying.
I'm sorry, Margaret. I missed the last part.
It's been on the agenda previously and today, so there is a record that the board has been trying to, re-elect the positions.
All right. Dr. Cohen, did you have a comment?
Yeah, I in light of the fact that we the same reason the last meeting, wanted to wait for better attendance on the board, I see no problem with us moving ahead with the election. We have a quorum. I doubt there's going to be any dissension in this, so I think we could... Since we should have done it previously, I think there's nothing wrong with finalizing that now.
I don't have any concerns for my part. I can't answer for Dr. Mastorius, so I'm fine continuing in the role, but I don't know if someone else wants to throw their hat in the ring either.
Madam President,
mm-hmm.
the members of the board, if I may,
I will reiterate the importance of properly scheduling time for an entire meeting for December. I think that would be very helpful. So that way we can have a full board to make this decision.
Okay.
So,
Dr. And Margaret, Moffitt, also, when you do this, put it at the top of the agenda, not at the end. Mm-hmm. It needs to be at the top, always.
Thank you, Mr. Hamed. Yes, thank you.
Okay, so we'll skip it for now. Is that, are we in agreement? We'll just move forward.
We'll table for now until December,
Okay, so we'll move forward then to agenda item P, Executive Director's Report. Margaret?
Thank you, Madam President. For the budget, our fiscal year 25 appropriation is $289,200. As of August 31st, 2024, our beginning cash balance is $241,207 with an ending cash balance of $247,678. 16.67% of the fiscal year has elapsed with the board spending at 16.29%. This is partially due to the fact that the 85-15 split went into effect on September 14th, 2024. As a reminder, the new split from 90-10 to 85-15 is a four-year timeframe through June 30th of 2028. Beginning July 1st, 2028, unless a new bill is passed, the fund will revert back to 90-10. Staff activities from August 1st to October 2nd of 2024, we have had 135 renewal applications received and processed, 10 new applications received, 9 new licenses were issued, 208 phone calls answered and returned, and 1,274 emails were received and answered. And that is for both the licensing admin and me. So it's not just me. To date, we have held 5 board meetings, including this one. So we are mandated to meet at least one more time this year. And I expect that will be in December. And so are there any future agenda items requested?
Yes, I got a future agenda item. More, not a future agenda item, but more of a procedure, if you will. And Margaret and Dr. Moffitt and Mona, this is something you guys can work on. Looking at the use of consent agenda items more than anything. So when we have things that are pretty routine, don't have to be, you know, go through a big discussion, but yet you want it on the record, looking at possibly creating a consent agenda item where you could say, I approve that, we approve the license of, you know, A through I or something like that. Something that where you can combine more things in one in a faster process, if you will, and it makes it go longer. And therefore, we won't have to have problems like we're having today, if you will, of quorum and things like that.
Thank you, Mr. Hamed. Any other agenda items for the future? Okay, I'm looking at our next final board meeting for this calendar year to be December 6th. Is everyone mostly available that day? Mona, Ms. Baskin, are you available?
Yeah.
If it's not December 6th, we will have to have it at some other point because we do have to have at least 6 meetings this calendar year.
All right. Yes, give me just a moment.
While Ms. Baskin is looking, does that work for the rest of you that are present?
Yes, it does.
Thank you.
This is Dr. Brown. That date works for me.
Okay, thank you. Hopefully it's far enough away from the Thanksgiving that's late this year and then early enough from all the other holiday fun.
Hopefully it's a big spot. You have a point there.
Okay, we just lost Dr. Cohen.
Thank you. Dr. Moffitt, members of the board, Ms. Whalen, I believe so. I have you guys down in my calendar. We switched over to a brand new system, so I just hope that it wasn't missed. But I do have, I have it blocked down for December 6th, Friday, starting at 8 a.m., so I should be good.
Okay. Well, for the moment, we just lost Dr. Cohen right before you pop back on, Mona. So I'm
going
to hope that he logs back in momentarily so we can just finish the director's report. That'll be the end of my report once he's back.
Madam President, Dr. Brown here. Is there anything else on the agenda that requires a quorum?
If we don't have, this is Mona Baskin. If we do not have a quorum, the meeting cannot continue. The meeting ends for lack of quorum.
Yes.
Dr. Cohen, just sign back on. Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I got knocked off. I'm back on.
Okay, so Dr. Cohen, December 6th was the next board meeting date that I suggested. That's our normal first Friday. Everyone on the meeting is available. Does that date work for you?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. That concludes my report, Madam Chair. You're muted, Dr. Moffitt.
Do we want to move agenda item Q so that we have more of the board here and can have a better discussion?
I would appreciate that.
Yeah, I think that that's probably. So we'll table agenda item Q also to the next meeting. And then maybe, Margaret, I think it'd be a great idea to send a good direct email to all of the board members to plan enough time for the meeting, just like you said, but don't feel shy about saying it like that.
I appreciate the support. Thank you, Dr. Moffitt. Thank you so much.
So that we can do this. And then call to the public, agenda item R, call to the public. Any members of the public that would like to address the board?
Madam President, I'm not part of the public, but I have a quick question for Mona Baskin.
We can't do that under call the public. Done. You have to get an agenda item for you to ask me the question, or you can maybe follow up with Margaret.
Okay. I hear no members of the public addressing the board. Agenda item S, motion to adjourn. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Move to adjourn the meeting.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second, Dr. Brown.
We've had a motion and a second to adjourn the meeting. Let's vote. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Aye.
Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye, and my apologies for the technical problems I had.
Thank you. I also vote aye. Motion passes 4-0. This concludes this October 3rd, 2024 meeting of the Arizona State Board of Optometry.
Thank you.
At 10:37
a.m. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.